Do you get frustrated with porn filters that block too much or too little? Let me introduce you to Plucky, a new filter that you customize. Here's how it works. You set your own boundaries, deciding which websites are and aren't safe for you. If you're thinking, I'm not sure I can trust myself all the time, Plucky is made for you. It enforces the boundaries that you set, and it enforces them with steel, so you can't self-sabotage when tempted. Plucky puts your best self in control. People in over 100 countries use Plucky. Pricing is on a sliding scale, so it's affordable for everyone. For a free 30-day trial with no sign-up required, go to pluckyfilter.com. Take courage, take control, get Plucky. Good day, friends. Jonathan Darty here with another edition of the PSR podcast. You know, we are a listener-supported broadcast, and we are an outreach of Be Broken Ministries. And our mission is to help men, women, and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. In today's episode, our guests are Johnny and Emily Spiegelmeyer, and they share their profound journey through Johnny's sex addiction and the impact that it had on their marriage. Johnny opens up about his early exposure to pornography, his secret struggles, and the eventual escalation that led to extramarital affairs. Emily shares her perspective, detailing the confusion and pain that she experienced, as well as her unwavering faith in their marriage's potential for healing. Together, they discuss their path to recovery, the importance of honesty, and their mission to help others through their podcast entitled Beyond Broken Vows. Their story is a powerful testament to redemption and hope. So if you're in a marriage that's experiencing infidelity or has experienced infidelity or any other kind of sexual betrayal, this episode really is going to help you discover hope and insights for healing and restoration. For more information about Johnny and Emily and their ministry, visit beyondbrokenvows.com. For additional resources, visit our website at bebroken.org or check out all the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And friends, I'm going to ask you, please rate and review the podcast after listening because it really does help others to find it. Now, let's go ahead and get into Johnny and Emily's story and the incredible hope that they share in Christ. Well, all right. We have with us Johnny and Emily Spiegelmeyer. So welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us. We're so excited to be here.
Yep. So glad to be here, Jonathan. Thank you.
You know, I love having guests on the program that where we can really highlight what I like to call redemptive stories. I think it's important that we have spaces and platforms to tell these stories. And so we've had a lot of guests over the years, whether it be an individual that has gone through a recovery process and really found freedom and healing from some kind of unwanted sexual behavior, or as in your case, we're going to bring a couple on to talk about what that story was like in terms of brokenness, but also healing and wholeness. And so I want to just jump right in and invite you guys to tell your story.
Well, Emily, you want to go first?
No.
No. Okay. Well, let's just
start.
Well, this is where we'll let the man lead the story. Okay. So, I, like many others who are dealing with sex addiction, came across pornography at an early age, at the age of 8. And it grabbed a hold of me, and it just sort of, you know, guided my life from there on out. The backstory behind why it stuck and I didn't talk to anybody about it was because I wasn't supposed to be in my mom and dad's room without them being there. And of course, that's where it was. And so when I found it, it grabbed a hold of me, but I also didn't talk to anybody out because I didn't want to get in trouble for not being where I wasn't supposed to be without permission. So just something that seems so small and maybe a little innocuous, that caused me to hide it. And so as a result of hiding it, I just carried it for the rest of my life, continuing to perpetuate it, you know, from 8 until 12 years old. And then, you know, then the masturbation began. As early as it was physically possible for me, fantasy life. And at that time, you know, in my younger years, I was also an extremely violent child. and had to go through many different kinds of therapists and things like that who were trying to figure out what was going on. Why is Johnny so violent? Why is he so off the hinges most of the time? And early in my teen years, I was observing an older friend of mine, and he just really had this outgoing personality that drove, that kind of pulled people and drew them to him. And I was like, wow, this is really good, because I was at this place now, my friends' parents were telling them to not be around me anymore because I was dangerous and destructive to them. I don't bear any ill will toward those parents anymore, because I understand that I was a destructive force in their children's lives at that time. And I know that we as parents would have made a similar decision to about our kids and who they spend time with. So God bless them for what they did. They probably did a good job of protecting them from somebody like me who was bent on destroying my life at that time. But I emulated this fella, and I put on this gregarious personality, and I discovered this shield of power where I could hide the chaos inside of me, and nobody would know that I was just melting down inside as long as I kept this gregarious personality on the outside. And people really were drawn to that. And I just say that part of the background because that's where I met Emily. Emily met that gregarious personality. She didn't meet the chaos inside. And then after we got married, that gregarious personality carried on into ministry. It carried into my jobs and in my ministry work. Everybody really thought that I was just the best, based on their kudos and the words and the encouragement that I was just receiving, the feedback. But they didn't know that I had this dark secret going on inside. So to kind of finish up the timeline of my story is that, yes, I became addicted to pornography from the age of 8, started masturbating and fantasizing in my teen years, early sexual experiences starting at 13, and the pornography wherever I could get it. I was able to set the pornography aside for about 4 years when I was dating and married Emily. But at the very tail end of my military years, the stress and the confinement of where I was serving during the war just kind of caused all that to crater in, and I succumbed back to the temptation of pornography. But from there, it was sporadic use here and there that grew over time, that eventually in 2007 became full-blown sexual relationships outside of my marriage, that then carried on to 3 of those relationships over 11 years until 2018, when I was discovered, when it all came out through my ministry leaders. And then they brought those accusations to me, and I had to admit that those were all true. So that brings us up to 2018, when I kind of got caught, and Emily's looking at me because now she has something she wants to share.
Well, actually, can I ask some questions before we get to Emily? We're definitely going to get to Emily, but I want to ask about when you talked about kind of the anger and violence as a young kid. What happened to that, and how was your pornography addiction either a way to medicate or mask that? And this, you talk about this gregarious personality. Was that just covering over an ongoing anger and violent streak, or had there been some kind of resolution to the anger and violence?
No, there was never any resolution to that. You know, when we coach with our clients and I talk about male emotions, I kind of frame it in this way, is that in general, if we as men are operating in a good space with identifying our emotions, we can usually easily identify 3, and that's either sad, mad, or glad. For me, though, I was living in 3 stages of anger. I was either mad, angry, or enraged. But all of that was below surface because I learned to mask that. Why? Because my greatest addiction actually was not the pornography or the sexual acting out with other women. It was my need for acceptance, the need for approval. And so if anybody could see this rage or anger underneath me, people didn't approve of that. But if they could see this other person, that was outgoing in the life of the party, then I could get approval through that. And so I just, that's how I masked over it. And, you know, and the rage was always there until discovery and disclosure and recovery started.
So then, Emily, when you met this gregarious Johnny, how long after you guys started dating and getting into a relationship did you maybe see glimpses of the angry, enraged Johnny? Like, was it, because the reason I'm asking is because sometimes those of us who develop a really secret sexual addiction, we become masters at deception. We become masters at kind of presenting an image. And I'm just curious, how long into the relationship before there was any cracks, and how did you respond when you started seeing maybe, hey, there might be another side to this Johnny guy?
Well, he was pretty young when I met him. He was 16, I was 18. And so we got married young too. He was 19 and I was 21. And is that right? 19, 21.
That's right.
And I think his anger didn't really pop out until after we were married, but it was shortly after, because I remember instances where he would get angry about something and he would start to destroy things in the apartment. And that was so not okay with me. It scared me and made me angry back at him for, you know, being so destructive. But he had backing up a little bit. I had led him to a relationship with Jesus. He grew up in the church, but he never knew Jesus as his personal Lord and Savior. And so he accepted him before we got married. And so he was a very young Christian when we got married, very, very baby in the faith. And so, but he was hungry for it. And so this anger phase didn't last. He was able to work through some of it, but maybe just then hid it mostly from me and everyone else again, got really good at that. But he did have some healing through his relationship with Jesus and really dug into the Word and was a Bible teacher for much of his ministry years. Loves the Word and loves Jesus. But yeah, that anger, it was pretty volatile right at the beginning of our marriage, but it did smooth out. And I thought it was gone, but evidently it was still under the surface there, hiding, waiting for its chance to come out again.
And how much did you know going into the marriage about any of the sexual struggles?
I knew about his experience at age 8 of finding his dad's pornography. I knew about the boys that had molested him at age 10 to 11. And then I knew about his sexual conquests as a teenager, but I didn't know about pornography being a thread throughout his entire childhood. I didn't know that he was active in that, you know, on a regular basis. When we got married, I had no clue that that was even a part of his life anymore.
So was it, and Johnny, you can answer this, were you sharing some of those things with Emily as a way of at least kind of saying, hey, here's a little bit about my story, but was it all kind of like, hey, that's behind me?
Yes, that's exactly it. And now that I look back, I know that at that time, I truly was sincere. I really wanted her to know who she was getting involved with. Plus, I wanted a space where I could open up to, about who I was, and she was proving to be that safe person that I could do that. What I didn't know until I started sex addiction recovery was that there was this underlying problem of how and why I got there to begin with as a child that was never dealt with. So with that, knowing that now, the deck was stacked against her from the beginning because not even I knew and understood what I was up against.
I'd love to hear from both of you in terms of what were your expectations, whether stated or not, just in your own mind, what were your expectations going into marriage around sex? Like, what expectations did you have for marriage when it came to the issue of sex?
Well, we were, neither one of us were virgins when we got married. And so we had some experience in that arena. But I think that I expected it to just be this amazing thing, you know, because we did stop having sex before we got married. We got premarital counseling and we stopped for months before, and sort of had a reset in our habit or in our thinking. We were both, we were both believers, but we had been sexual. And so it was like, I thought that it was going to be a wonderful, miraculous type of relationship of intimacy. And, you know, that, that new bride thing where you just, you're thinking that it's all just going to be wonderful. You know, we took our vows really seriously. We got some very good counseling about our vows and what they mean. And so I was very committed to that. And, you know, of course, nobody knows when you get married what you're actually committing to. You don't know what those, for better or for worse, things are actually going to be. You're just like, yes, let's do this. But, you know, it was, for me, I was just very excited that we were going to be able to express our love in that way. And I thought it was going to be wonderful.
Right. And sadly, mine was just a whole lot more primal than that. I was just excited that, that we were going to have sex anytime we wanted, legally through the church.
Yeah, it's the sanctioned relationship by God, right? Where sex is is commissioned or condoned. Well, then you said that there was a period of time, Johnny, where you were not engaging with pornography, but then after your service, military service, it started up again. Was Emily, did you know anything about that? And how long did that go on before there was anything that you knew, Emily, around that behavior?
Yeah. So at the tail end of his military service, right before he, what do you call that?
We separated.
From the military. He had started that relationship with pornography again. And I was pregnant with our firstborn, and we separated and came back to where we live now. And
separated from the military.
Yeah, I think I said that. And so we were, you know, pregnant, and or we had just had a baby. And I think it was probably maybe a year after you started back using it that you told me. So we had a newborn baby, and we're actually living with his parents at the time, trying to figure out how to buy our first house. And he came to me and confessed it. He told me that he had started using pornography right at the tail end of his last year in the military. So that was the first, year five of our marriage was the first that I knew that he was using pornography.
And how did you respond to that, Emily?
Not well, probably normally, but I was so hurt and angry and confused. And I just, I was like, to me, it was definitely adultery. To me, it was, you know, breaking covenant. That's how I felt about it. And that scared him, my reaction, because he didn't really feel that way about it. And my reaction caused his fear to make him want to hide again. And so then through the years of our marriage, this pornography issue would pop up occasionally. Either I would discover it or he would confess it. Wasn't very often, but we would try to get through it ourselves, or we would go see a counselor for just one time or a handful of times. And that, you know, we didn't really expose it or get it out into the light. We just tried to, you know, work through it ourselves, and then it smoothed over seemingly for a while, and then it would pop up again later. But it wasn't anything that was really prevalent in our marriage of by then, by the time he was discovered at 31 years of marriage, you know, it had only been a handful of times. And so it wasn't like that was the focus of our marriage. And so I had no clue that he was actually involved in it way more than that, way more than I was aware.
Right.
Yeah. And I think you, you kind of answered the question that I was going to ask is, Johnny, was there anybody else that knew about this? Like any other men, any pastor, anybody else that knew what was going on?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm glad that you asked it, because this, it's such an important question. So younger in my ministry years, I'm mid-20s, and I was voted onto leadership board of my church. And at that time, the pornography was really starting to take an uptick. And so I took it to the my fellow leadership and also in the context of a men's Bible study on a Saturday morning. And I just I went the James route where I was going to, you know, ask the leadership of the church to pray, let them know what was going on, and let them help in my healing. And the saddest thing that I have to report about that was the general sense, and pretty close to these words, it's okay, we struggle with this too. And knowing what I know now, I have a little bit of retroactive anger, but then grace kicks in, is that they had no idea what they were dealing with either. And so that's, excuse me. So part of what, you know, we do in ministry is just to kind of highlight that this is never okay. Pornography use is, it's never okay and should never even be projected in that. Can there be grace? Absolutely. So I had been involved with some other men in accountability, but it was always the same way. It was really just staying accountable to, are we doing it? Or are we not doing it? Are we allowing God to speak into it? Are we praying enough? Are we memorizing the right verses? Are we, you know, and the thing that I have learned is that unless you get yourself into a recovery program, as much as we as believers don't want to say this, there isn't enough Jesus that we can put into our lives by an act of our own will to stop this. Now, I use traditional 12-step through Sex Addicts Anonymous for my recovery program. And by God's grace, from the moment I read through the 12 steps, I see Jesus in all 12 of them and have from the very beginning. And so I'm so grateful for what has set me free. But that same idea is still so prevalent in the church that it's okay, I struggle with it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and before we get to the recovery part, I want to ask the question, what were the circumstances that caused you to move beyond pornography into actually having in-person affairs outside of your marriage?
I guess the simplest way to say is that, you know, with our addiction, it escalates. It never stays dormant, never stays in one spot. It will, because of the nature of addiction, you sort of level off. You get this plateau where what the hit you were looking for before doesn't give you what you want. So your mind starts looking for it elsewhere and starts craving it. And really it just became a method of opportunity. Who could I get involved with that would be safe to keep myself secret from, you know, so it really kind of became a little bit of a vetting process. Through that, who would be the most safe? Nobody would know anything about it. And I could just have this secret sexual relationship with this person that's so detached from my normal life that there wouldn't be any suspicion that I was involved with anybody anywhere. And sadly, it worked.
So you were intentional about your pursuit of someone outside your marriage. In other words, it wasn't just, oh, a coincidental occasion occurred. You're making it sound like you were intentional in terms of moving beyond that barrier.
I would say with the very first occasion in 2007, it was opportunity and accidental, just like you suggested. But I made a clear decision to enter into that at that time. And then when that relationship ended, then I was left with the experience and the knowledge that I could do it, that I had gotten away with it. And that addict mind starts looking for, how can I do that again? And that's exactly what happened. It was, you know, maybe a year in between before I found myself active again.
And to be clear, I think you will agree with what I'm about to say, Johnny. Whether an affair is opportunistic or intentional, it's all wrong. I'm not trying to make some kind of thing where, oh, you know what, if all of a sudden this opportunity just falls in your lap, then, you know, there's a difference to that than if I go intentionally. Both of them are a violation of those vows of your marriage. So now, Emily, over this 11-year period, what, if anything, were you becoming aware of in Johnny, whether there was anything being spoken of about these things? Were you seeing changes, and how were you navigating that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was seeing changes in him that I didn't like, but I would never have thought that it was connected to anything like he was doing, because, you know, he was a wonderful husband. I thought he was a really great husband. He was a great dad. He was in ministry. He was helping people constantly. He was this amazing person. And, you know, I believed that he had this true relationship with Jesus, which he did. But there were things that would pop up that would just like confuse me, like his overwhelming selfishness sometimes, or entitlement, or breaking his promises to me. You know, I could see him promising things to other people and keeping them, but he was constantly breaking his promises to me. And even in little things, but it was just those tiny little red flags. And then there were a few occasions where I was just like really confused about where he was, or something that he said, or, you know, it was just like these little nigglings of something's off, but he always had a great explanation, and he was always able to tell me something that made a lot of sense. And so then I was like, okay, everything's fine. And, you know, I knew that he was becoming more and more self-absorbed and more selfish as the years went by. I mean, I really thought we had a 15-year honeymoon. Honestly, it was a great marriage from my perspective. And then things were getting harder between us, and his ministry work was taking him away from me often. And so we were separate, you know, we were being separate through that, and just kind of, I guess the relationship was getting strained. And, you know, there were some times when I was pretty upset, and I thought really that he did have a mistress at one point towards the end, but I thought that mistress was called ministry. And so, you know, as a Christian wife, how can I say anything against him doing ministry? You know, although I do believe that his family should come first over his ministry work, but it's hard. You're in a hard place when you see that what he's doing is helping other people. How can I be so selfish as to say, you know, I need you here with me more often. I need us to connect better. It was getting harder because there was some sort of something in between us that had never been there before. And what he didn't tell you back in 2007, when he decided to enter in that first extramarital relationship, he had closed his heart off to me. He told me later in 2007, he decided I wasn't safe anymore because I didn't approve of, you know, the different times that he would admit his pornography use. You know, of course, I wasn't accepting of it. I wasn't actually, I didn't understand addiction. He didn't either. We didn't even know that that was even the case. And so I didn't know that he was struggling with something that I could possibly be compassionate about. I just felt betrayed all the time. And so he decided he was just not going to talk about it anymore. And he kind of hardened his heart off to me, which then I think allowed him to take those next steps and, you know, escalate his addiction.
A lot of what you're describing, Emily, is what we hear are the ongoing effects of gaslighting. So when somebody's hiding something from you, I believe firmly that God has, in many ways, and these things always operate in a bell curve, but generally speaking, has wired women in such a way that they've got a radar. There's like an emotional and spiritual radar, and your radar was pinging on various things, even if Johnny wasn't opening up about anything. But because of his brilliance in deception and hiding, which we call gaslighting, right? It's a way of saying, no, what you are thinking is not actually true. It's actually false. It starts to cause you to doubt, and you feel like your radar is off. So what I want to talk about now is, okay, discovery and what happened from there. What did healing look like for both of you? And Emily, I'd like for you, in maybe talking about your healing in particular, what was it like to maybe get back your radar, like being able to trust your radar again? So, yeah. But first, let's start with Johnny, because obviously when disclosure happens and you got to come into the light and you've got to make a decision, are you really going to engage honest, authentic transformation now, or are you going to kind of limp along in the dark again?
Yeah, that's so good, Jonathan. So I think toward the end, before I was discovered, that my desire for the pornography, the relationships that I was involved in, was starting to crumble, and it was really losing its desire. I knew that something was wrong. And just through some Google searches that I was looking through, I still had not been discovered yet. Ironically, I was doing some Google searches with regard to the last woman that I was involved with. And I come across this whole other thing about sex addiction. And some of that sounded way too familiar about the way I was behaving. So I kind of shut that off and, you know, kind of moved on from that. And then when it did all come out through discovery, and when we, I made the choice to do a full disclosure, not a healthy, full therapeutic disclosure, I did a couch disclosure where I verbally vomited all over Emily and our senior pastor, and which did some damage to both of them because of the way it went, but it was all out. And I was, you know, ready to move forward. And my pastor suggested, Johnny, I really believe that you might be I really believe that you're addicted to sex and that you need to get treatment for that. And so just knowing what I had read before and hearing what he said, and the position that I was in, I was like, you know what? I think you're right. And I made good on that. And within 3 weeks, I had found my recovery program and had started recovery in January of 2019. So it was December of 2018 when discovery and disclosure happened for us. But by January of 2019, I had already had us into therapy and was in a recovery program for myself.
Yeah. And so then, Emily, what was that like for you to finally have, you know, sort of all the cards on the table, or at least what you could hopefully believe were all the cards on the table? I know sometimes there's doubts that happen in the betrayed spouse of going, are these really all the cards? But what was that like for you? And what did your healing journey look like after disclosure?
Yeah. So that was really tough. The first time he came home from his confrontation with the ministry leaders, he admitted to them that he had been having this affair with this woman. But what he told me was just a one incident kind of thing with her. And so it was devastating to me, obviously, because it was still adultery. But there was no sexual intercourse with that at that time, on that occasion that he was admitting to. So I started asking questions, and over the next 2 weeks, things weren't adding up. And I was just getting more and more upset because I felt like he wasn't being honest and truthful. And then that's when the Holy Spirit got a hold of him and said, you have to tell her everything. If you ever want her to have a good life, or if you want to be free, you have to confess it all. And so then that's when he said he vomited all over us with all the information, which was, you know, a pretty extensive confession. But after that, I had 1,000 questions, right? And so as I was asking my questions, I was still getting omissions and minimization and, you know, some blame shifting and some gaslighting. The leaky tire thing really is what we call it, because he was being truthful to a point, but he was still not coming clean with all the details. And so that lasted for a few months until he had another experience where he made a decision that he was going to be completely honest no matter what. Because I was begging for it. I said, it doesn't matter how much this hurts me to hear, I need the truth. I have to have the whole truth. And he finally capitulated and realized that that really was the only way out and forward. So he started telling me the truth, and I was confident in that. And so that's when my healing really started, was after I knew that I had gotten all the truth. And so I was able, we did go through a marriage intensive, which was very helpful. But then I also joined a women's recovery group actually with Be Broken. And that was very helpful for me to have some people who knew what I was going through to be with. And I also told my friends, my three best friends, I included them in that. After the first couple of weeks, I was just so devastated and so embarrassed and ashamed that this was my marriage, that this was going on. And I didn't want anybody to know, but I finally did let some folks in, my friends and a couple of women at church who had also experienced this and had been successful in recovery. So I just kind of expanded my world a little bit at that point to allow others in and not do this on my own. And Johnny, from that point on, when he decided to tell the truth and be rigorously honest with me, that was like, it kind of shot us forward pretty quickly in our recovery process. And we eventually, a little bit less than 2 years into it, had a vow renewal ceremony that was beautiful, with about 75 people in attendance who had been praying for us and or walking through this with us. And so that was very healing for me as well.
At what point in the healing journey, because it sounds like from the very beginning of this disclosure that you were both making the choice that you remain married, that you work through this. I mean, and that's commendable. That's obviously very difficult. And yet you're reaping the fruit of that. Now, what was it like when, as you're healing and you're restoring, and then you start feeling a nudge from God to actually have your story be helpful mm-hmm. for others, like this ministry call? What was that like? Because it's one thing for you guys just to have some healing in your own relationship and work through all the challenges and difficulties of that. It's a whole nother thing to do what you're doing right now, which is tell your story to the world. What was that like for you?
Right. Let me back up just a second.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to back up because our senior pastor, after the disclosure, asked me if I wanted to divorce Johnny because I did have grounds for divorce. And I, at that point, I was still in shock, I think. And I just said, no, I didn't want to make any decisions about that. But he asked me then again, two different occasions. And on the third time, I just asked him to stop asking because I had made my decision. Not that it was an easy one, but I knew that God could do a miraculous thing. In fact, he miraculously healed Johnny from his desire for pornography at his confession with his ministry leaders. Then the hard work of recovery comes in, you know, after that, where you have to deal with why he got there in the first place and get all that junk out, right? But it was like a decision that I made knowing that God could fix this, he could heal us, but that didn't mean it was easy throughout all of that turmoil. And, you know, sometimes I did have doubts. Sometimes I thought, well, maybe we won't divorce, but I can't live with him in the same house right now, or I don't know how I can get through this part, you know, and stay married. So there were some doubts that came in throughout the process, but you know, I deep down, I always knew I've loved Jesus since I was 5 years old, and I knew he could do this. He's bigger than this. And I just trusted in that even through all the darkest times. And so there was a belief in me and in Johnny that we knew that with God healing us this way and restoring our marriage and actually giving us a brand new marriage, we weren't going to be able to keep that to ourselves. We know that he was going to ask us to, in some way, tell more people about that experience, you know, have a witness for it. And we didn't know if that meant just speaking in church or writing a book or, you know, we didn't know, but we just knew that someday God would ask us to share our story in a public way. And, you know, I wasn't really ready to do that for quite a while. I had lost a lot of confidence in myself, and I was trying to gain that back through my healing process, my recovery journey. And I was starting a new career in affiliate marketing, you know, online business. And it just wasn't really getting anywhere because I was trying to speak to niches that were, you know, for women over 50, or, you know, we have a little farm out here and it was, you know, about our farm, or it was just like, I wasn't gaining any ground. And finally God spoke to me and said, you know what, Emily, this is the time I want you to tell your story publicly. And this is how you're going to do it. And he dumped this podcasting idea in my lap. And we didn't know anything about podcasting at that time. I had never even listened to a podcast before, but he led us to this podcasting coach, this wonderful Christian woman who is, her passion is to help others build kingdom businesses and in the podcasting arena. And so I went through that course and we launched a podcast back on Memorial Day 2023. Yep. And told our story to the world. And that was amazing and humbling and terrifying. But now I just am so grateful that he's taken this dust that our marriage was shattered into and created something so brand new out of it, and that other people can benefit from what we've experienced. And it's all to the glory of God.
Yeah, that's good. What was that like for you, Johnny?
So I'm a natural storyteller. And part of my hiding through the gregarious personality is that when I was teaching or preaching, I frequently told on myself. I was frequently very transparent and vulnerable about my history and my past, just not the deepest, darkest parts that I was trying to keep hidden. So I was always in a position where I was ready to tell stories about myself. And like I said, I did frequently when I was teaching. So I knew in some capacity that I would be telling the story. I had been ready really from the beginning. And as I was talking with folks and letting them in on what's going on with us, I kind of got a lot more rehearsal at that than Emily did. I had more people that I could share that with than Emily did, between those that I served in ministry with, those that I had built discipleship relationships with, and then those who are in my recovery group. You know, so I was in a place where I was already for the, you know, from 2019 until 2023 when this started, so 4 years, I was already telling the story on a regular basis. So when I didn't know that it was going to come about in this way either, and I wasn't really pushing for it. But Emily comes to me one particular day and says, God's telling me it's time to tell the story, and we're going to do it through a podcast. And I'm like, what's a podcast? And so the process seemed natural. So when she brought that to me, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, that's cool. Even though I didn't know what a podcast was, I was already settled. And yeah, let's tell our story. This is going to be cool. And so there we started adventure that we didn't really know what we were getting into. But I got to tell you, Jonathan, I would not turn my back on this for all the money in the world, because what we're doing now has not only been strengthening and healing for Emily and I as we go through this, but the help that we're able to give to others pays rewards that we never thought was possible.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, before we wrap up, Emily, I do want to circle around and just ask the question, do you feel like you've gotten your radar back? Like, has your radar been repaired?
Yes, you did ask that. Yes, absolutely. It's funny because we talk about this connection that we have where we can see each other. I can see him. I never could read him before. He was a closed book. You know, I couldn't see into his soul when I looked into his eyes. And I couldn't tell, you know, my radar might've been going off like there's something wrong, but I could never read on him what it was or if there was something that he was hiding. He was so good at hiding. But now I can see everything. I can look in his eyes and I can know, and I can look at his body language and I can tell if there's something bothering him. You know, it's just wonderful. It's like, it's that true intimacy that we have now because we're exposing ourselves to each other in every area of our marriage and our lives. And now there's no secrets, there's no hiding. It's just, it's wonderful because we see into each other now.
Yeah. And even,
that's
even
beautiful.
Just a quick follow-up to that is that not only can she see me, but there's many times when she can perceive that something is off with me before I even understand that something is off. Even to the case where that was this morning. This morning, I seemed a little off and I didn't know, I wasn't aware of it. And she says, hey, look at me. She literally got into my eyes and was like, "You don't seem right. What's going on?" And that put me into place because of my recovery. I start going through this internal inventory of what I'm feeling, what's going on, identify where I'm at right now, and then I can tell her where it is. But she noticed it before I was aware of it.
That's really good. You know, that's kind of, you know, since we are made in the image of God and we are told to walk in the light as he is in the light, you think of the oneness that there is in God. There's no dividedness. There's no deception. There's no hiding. And I think when a couple comes into that space where both are saying, we're both going to be in the light, there is a sense in which that's where real intimacy and healing and oneness can occur. As we wrap up here, where can people go to learn more about you guys and whatever resources that you have that would help any couple that might be in a similar kind of situation?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. So the first place that you can reach us and find the most about us is to listen to our podcast, Beyond Broken Vows. And you can find us on all major platforms. On that podcast, starting with the very first two episodes, Emily and I tell our entire story. And so you get the understanding of who we are in that podcast from the beginning. We're very open and vulnerable about our story, to where we try to make ourselves so connected to people that they just understand that we're going through the same thing in real time as they are. And those people are being drawn to us. A second way that you can get in touch with us is become an insider, insider.beyondbrokenvow.com.
Yeah, that's where you can sign up for our newsletter and connect with us there. We also have a website, beyondbrokenvows.com, and that's where you can find everything about our coaching services and our podcast. And we do have an ebook that we like to make available to people. So you can write us at support@beyondbrokenvows.com.
That's awesome. Well, Johnny and Emily, this has been a great conversation. Thanks for sharing your story and for being with us today.
It was our pleasure, Jonathan.
So glad to be here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we're going to put all those things in the show notes so you can get access to the resources that Johnny and Emily have. We want to help come alongside you and help you take your next best step towards wholeness in Christ. So please reach out. And we look forward to seeing you back here next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.